The Approaching the Natural Podcast with Sid Garza Hillman. Sid is the author of Approaching the Natural, a health manifesto, a certified nutritionist, health coach, and programs director at the Stanford Inns Wellness Center on the Mendocino coast of California.
Hello, small steppers. Sid Garza Hillman here, host of this here show, the Approaching the Natural Podcast. Welcome, one and all. I am glad you're here. It's episode 139. Boom. That was to lead you to believe that that was somehow special. And it's really not, but yet, just as special as any other number. I mean, let's be honest. But welcome, you guys. And this is an interview. I got an interview going on today. I'm really excited about it. If you are just joining me, I don't do a ton of interviews. I scatter them now and then, completely unplanned in terms of when I insert them into the regimen. And mostly it's all by gut. It's when I come across somebody who I go, I want to talk to that person. And that's the criteria that I go with. I think that's okay, right? So we're going to get to this interview. It's with Zach Bitter. Who is Zach Bitter? You may not know who Zach Bitter is. Oh, here's why. Because I don't do, like, this isn't an ultra runner type themed podcast. You guys know that I've done two, so I'm not really an ultra marathoner per se. I've done a couple, literally. Three, if you count the fact that I ran all 31.4 miles of my own race the day before my race. But other than that, not like seasoned. But if you've listened to this podcast before, you know that I draw certain parallels between what my experience was with those and the experience of anybody taking on anything. I think that it's all relative, and I think that my distances that I run are the same as somebody who runs a mile, if that is their experience of that, the way that it is for me to do the longer distances. This is, we're all in the same boat here. We're all adding things. We're all experiencing things. We're all hopefully incrementally adding things in a small steppers way to incorporate change over time. I mentioned in the interview with Zach, but I mean, this is like a, you know, it's a mind blower to actually talk to somebody, but to know that there's somebody out here who can run as far as he runs, as fast as he runs, it blows my mind. And so it is interesting to me. However, you will hear parallels to just everyday living. Please stick with us. It's freaking really good. He is an interesting guy and a very nice guy, so I'm really happy about that. But first, let's get some announcements quickly out of the way. This is sponsored by, as always, Health, or as always, meaning the last three episodes, Health Made Simple. That's the meal plan that Matt Frazier, the No Meat Athlete, and I launched together. It is still rolling. We're still doing Q&As. Get in on it, guys. It's freaking awesome. And so far, overwhelmingly, people are happy with it. That's a good news. I mean, there's always going to be some, you know. NoMeatAthlete.com/health/NoMeatAthlete.com/health/. Okay? Good. iTunes reviews. A few more came in. Thank you. You can go to SidGarzaHillman.com. Put your email address in and get a free chapter of my book. You can donate to the podcast by pushing a button. It's as easy as a push of a button. You can buy Approaching the Natural t-shirts, mugs, bracelets, some custom signed copies of my book. You determine what I write in there. Just had a couple of those come in the last few days. So anyway, thank you everybody. And I did mention that I'm looking for a couch to sleep on in Scotland. That's not a joke, but I got a couple of donations coming in for the podcast to support me in that endeavor. And I really do appreciate that. If I do find a couch, then of course I'll be using those donations to buy single malt scotch. Did I say that? Sorry, I'll edit that out. Note to self, remove the whiskey reference from a philosophy of health podcast. Woo! I work at the Stanford Inn, stanfordinn.com, and there you'll find retreats. I have a couple spots left for the June 20th running retreat with Matt Frazier and I, and me, with Matt Frazier and me, nay. So if you want to get in on that, go to stanfordinn.com or email me, podcast@sidgarzahillman.com. I'll be at the World Vegan Summit July 29th, 30th, speaking there, Edinburgh, Scotland, as I mentioned, August 20th and 21st, all 2016, World Veg Fest, October 8th and 9th, and Atlanta, Georgia, November 12th. New YouTube video on the way. I'm actually editing it tonight, and hopefully that'll launch soon. And a couple quick things. I'm back on the dial back days. I'm doing one today, and back on the integrated exercise, albeit a little bit more minimal, so more on that next week when we jump back in on the more regular type of Approaching the Natural podcast episode that you have grown to know and love. Anyway, thank you guys. I'm going to pop back in at the end of this interview. I really want you to listen to this. This is kind of, it's a world that is like, it's like a Wes Anderson movie. It's like a subculture. And to these people, they are nutty nut nut, but like in the best way. 100 miles is like, it's hard. It's kind of, I went to the grocery store. Oh, you did? Yeah, I ran 100 miles. Who is Zach Bitter briefly? He is an ultra runner and coach. He holds currently the 100-mile American record and the 12-hour world record, most miles in a 12-hour period. You can find out about him at Zach Bitter, ZACHBITTER.com. He's a really nice guy. Why do I have him on my podcast? Here's why. He won my race. He won the Mendocino Coast 50K. I found out a couple weeks before that he was going to come and run it. I was very excited about that because I had heard about him before. Obviously, he's a big name in that world. And these guys and women do it for the love. They're not driving Rolls Royces, I'll put it that way. They love this. This interview and this podcast, by the way, in general, is about passion. It's about understanding discomfort and that there is struggle associated with chasing the things that we want in our lives. And there is joy in spite of that struggle, and maybe even because of that struggle. I tap on into those things in this interview. Please listen, dig it, and give me an iTunes review. Whatever. Oh, man. All right, you guys. Here he is, Zach Bitter. Enjoy. Your Skype thing said Madison, Wisconsin. Is that where you hail from?
Yeah, that's actually where I used to live. I moved to Davis last July, and I must not have updated that on my profile yet.
That's okay. And what spurred the move to Davis? Running?
Yeah, it was just, I think, more like the variety of options you have out here. Like Madison and Wisconsin are great, but you have a lot of flat paved running and stuff, and you don't have as much access to mountainous trail. Well, no access to mountainous trails, but like, to prepare for some races, it was just kind of nicer to be out this way. And then, I visited California in 2009 and was kind of like, knew that this is probably kind of the area I wanted to be. And just the opportunity kind of came up. So I jumped at it, and it's been great so far.
Cool. So I wanted to, first congratulate you on the win at the Mendocino Coast 50K.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, that was a fun event.
Yeah, it was great having you there, and obviously I had heard about you, but I was really excited when Ultra was like, Zach can go, and I was like, yes, that would be great. And so didn't expect it, and I think we actually had to move up the setup time on some of our aid stations all of a sudden, because we had to make sure that everybody was in place by the time you kind of flew by there. But anyway, What I wanted to talk to you about today and just kind of ask you questions is really about your history. And to go back to the beginning, what I'm fascinated about is your entry into a sport that is, I would think, hopefully you would agree, but in kind of a transition, or at least just about, it's growing, but it's not quite mainstream. I mean, I still talk to people who are like, wait, what's an ultra marathon? You know?
Sure.
So
yeah,
what was your, where did you grew up in? You actually were born in Wisconsin?
No, so I've lived in the Midwest my whole life. I was actually born in Minnesota, and then my family shortly thereafter moved to Nebraska, where I went to my early school ages through second grade, and then we moved to Wisconsin, and then I kind of was all over the place in Wisconsin from high school towards and in college, and then during the 5 years I was teaching. So Wisconsin very much for the majority of my life, but mm-hmm. Midwest the whole time.
So growing up, what were your interests? I mean, were you into athletics as a young age? What was your earliest memory and experiences there?
Yeah, I mean, my parents were like super proactive about like giving me the opportunities to try a bunch of different sports. So I definitely ran the gamut of most of those traditional sports, and generally liked being active and liked moving around. So I kind of gravitated towards those things. And then I want to say it was in like middle school, is where I kind of realized like that I could either get my butt kicked in the 100-meter dash or I could win the mile. So you know, as a middle school student or boy, you're gonna move towards what you're good at. So I started kind of getting intrigued by distance running.
And is that because you were just introduced by a coach? Like everybody had to run the mile, everybody had to do 100, and then it was sort of where you fell into with your abilities?
Yeah, to some degree. I mean, I think it was in sixth grade, you know, we did the presidential physical fitness, and I don't know if that's around anymore or not. But,
it was when I was a kid. I think I'm older than you, but yeah, it definitely was the pull-ups and the sit-ups and the running and everything else.
Yeah, I'm sure there's some kind of like evolved form of it by now, but yeah, I remember doing the mile run, and you know, I had a really small class, but I had finished ahead of everyone, and you know, everyone else was just like kind of, you know, you finish and they were just like, I never want to do that again, kind of a mentality.
Right.
And I was kind of like, I guess that was probably my first like runner's high, I guess, experience, because I was like, I kind of want to do that again. Wow. So then that was kind of like the spark, I guess. And then, you know, my dad, definitely, you know, helped out a bit, cause he saw that, like, that was something I enjoyed. So like, I remember doing some like middle school cross country meets. Like, we didn't have a team or anything at the school I went to, but, there were just a few, you know, some of those like, you know, mile and a half cross country races or something like that. And if there was one around, my dad would found a couple of them. So that kind of just helped kind of prove, or, you know, instill that, you know, a joy for running at that early age.
And would you train like for those, since there was no actual team, what was your training regimen like? Was it on your own, or did you have friends that would do that with you?
Yeah, I mean, at that point in my life, there really wasn't any training for the most part. Like, I would just kind of do whatever my friends were doing, which were pretty active stuff, biking, playing sports. And then when it was something like that cross country race, I would just basically enter it and then, you know, race it. When we would do like track and field, basically once that season would start, and my thought was basically, oh, well, I'll just run a mile every day because that's the race I'm doing. So it was almost like in practice, like pretty close to 100% push at the mile every practice day. And then that was it. And, you know, that was kind of the early stages before I really knew anything about training or what it really took to actually peak for a race or anything like that.
Uh-huh. And when you went, so and did that carry on into high school? When you went to high school, was there a cross country team?
Yeah. So, my family actually moved after my eighth grade year. So I was in a completely new city starting at high school. And, my first year I didn't do cross country. I played football. And I think that was more or less just because I was trying to kind of do what everyone else was doing. And the football team was much more developed than the cross country team was. And, but you know, that didn't last very long because I wasn't all that effective at football. And then track, you know, track I did. And then, by my sophomore year in high school, I was, you know, in love with cross country, and I raced cross country pretty much through college after that.
And were you competitive in terms of, obviously you were doing competitions, but what were your times back then? Did you start to see that you were excelling at this?
To some degree, like I would say, you know, when you look at like the top tier runners in the state, you know, I was very much at the bottom of the elites or the tops or whatever you'd say. Like, I mean, I went to a small Division III school, and I think my best cross country performance was at our state meet my senior year. I was like 24th, and ran like a 17. I think it was like a 17 flat or something like that. It was a low 17 minute 5K on a not an easy, but not a super hard cross country course either. And so, you know, I wasn't like blowing off the screens and like getting recruited to D1 schools or anything like that. But, I was competitive enough to enjoy it and to, get some decent results.
Did it carry you into college? I mean, did you go on a scholarship or anything, or you just found a place to go to where you could run at college too?
Yeah. So like actually my first year of college, I was very much more along the mindset of, you know, what do I want to do as a career and less about where do I want to run? So my first year of college, I actually didn't compete, cause I still wasn't really sure like what I wanted to do. So I stuck around town and, went to one of the satellite schools that, eventually filter you into one of the bigger UW programs or University of Wisconsin programs, just because I knew, like, I didn't really know what I wanted to do. And all these different UW schools kind of have their focus in certain areas. So I wanted to have an idea of what I wanted to do before I picked one of those. So then I did that following summer, and I'm going to the University of Wisconsin, Stevens Point, who has a very good Division III track and cross country program. So I had talked to the coach right away then, and, you know, kind of asked him what I needed to do to get on the team, or like what the process was. And, you know, he's very much a high mileage type of coach. And that's something that I definitely gravitated to eventually. But I remember our first meeting, he was kind of breaking down what a lot of the distance runners would do. And he's like, most of the incoming freshmen would run like 50 miles a week. And then by the time they're seniors, they would be in the 90 mile week range during like the biggest phase of their building. And some of the guys would even hit 100 mile weeks. And I remember, like, it was yesterday when he said that, thinking, there's no way I'll ever run 90 miles in a week.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
At any point in my life. So,
right.
So it's funny how that perception kind of changes as you evolve. But, yeah, that was kind of like my intro to collegiate running. And, I mean, we were a Division III school, in the WIAC conference, which is a really, really strong conference in the Midwest. I mean, there were years where there'd be like three teams from the WIAC, that would be placing in like the top five, top 10 in the nation. So,
wow.
You know, it was a strong D3 conference and team. And I was very much average, amongst those guys, at those higher level D3 programs.
Right.
But it was a great experience for sure.
Were you hitting 90 mile weeks by that time?
Yeah. So I think by my last summer, going into my final cross country season, I was hitting some 90 mile weeks.
What were the race distances?
Pretty much 5K, 10K for track. And then, our cross country was 8K pretty much across the board.
So why the heck? I'm blown away that much mileage for, I mean, you said the coach was high mileage, but that's a disproportionate amount of high mileage to me. I don't know much about it, obviously, but it just seems like a massive amount of mileage for such a short distance of running.
Yeah. You know, it's basically, it depends on what principles you follow. A lot of, you know, 5K, 10K, even at like the professional level or the collegiate level, you know, they still put a lot of focus on developing that aerobic system.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, you could make a argument as to, you know, where's that crossover point, to where like you risk kind of injury or burnout.
Right.
But at a lot of these collegiate programs too, you have a big enough population of talent where you're actually probably better off putting everyone kind of through the gauntlet to some degree. And then, you know, just banking on like enough of the guys and gals to kind of rise to the top and then see some pretty big performance gains, on that. And, you know, I definitely felt like, coming from a high school where I did very, like, you know, 30 miles a week was probably like a peak mileage week for me. So it certainly took me a while to kind of like get used to it and build up to that. And, you know, it may have been even after college where I really started to see some of the benefits of developing that base while I was in college. Cause it is something that you have to adapt to. I mean, you even look at like, you know, a lot of runners who are, training from an early age on, you know, they tend to start hitting their fastest times a little earlier if they have like a youth that was centered around high amounts of aerobic activity. I think it's similar for everyone. It just kind of depends on where your timeline is in beginning that journey.
Right. So how early your body adapts to that kind of energy efficiency, essentially. And,
right.
And like the VO2 max, I mean, were those things this is like way more technical than I even wanted to get, but I'm just curious on for my own self, but did you do that kind of testing in college? I mean, was that the kind of training that the coach was running?
Yeah, I mean, we were doing stuff like that. We didn't have like any prescribed, like, let's test your VO2 max and try to base your workouts around it or anything like that. And we had, I had buddies who were in like the exercise phys major, and they were, you know, working in the performance lab and stuff. So you could, we could go and get a VO2 max test if we wanted to and kind of figure those things out. And, but from a coaching standpoint, it wasn't as focused on that side of things.
So, I mean, I'll get into a little bit of the stress and all that kind of stuff, but even in college, I mean, if you're hitting 90 plus miles a week and you're doing, I mean, is that two a days or are you sort of doing that in the morning? What do you, what's your, what did you remember what your week to week kind of looked like?
Yeah. So, I mean, like the 90 mile stuff, that was very much so like, you know, a summer training block where, okay, where you're not doing a lot of intensity. So like, I mean, you might start doing some tempo runs like midway through the summer. But once the season started, there wasn't a whole lot of guys going much over 80, if that. I mean, that was probably the peak week for most guys during the season. And then we would, you know, we would supplement the less miles with higher intensity workouts and things like that. So once the season started, it was pretty much the format was more or less there'd be a day where you do something like shorter and faster, like, you know, 800 repeats with like the last 200 going up a hill, and then like a couple days later we would do something more tempo minded. So it might be like you know, a 3 mile tempo on like this grass loop out on a field,
right?
You know,
right.
if it was track, we would do it all on a track,
right?
And then we'd have a race, usually most Saturdays. And then, Sundays were always our long run day. So we'd run like, you know, 15 miles usually would be like what the high mileage guys would do. And there'd be maybe a couple of weeks during the season where we'd stretch up to 18 miles and then come back down as championship season started.
Right. But you're a full-time student at this point.
Yeah. Yep.
So how are you balancing? What I'm really focused on, I'll sort of, spoiler alert, a little bit about this. What's fascinating to me is that at this point, ultra marathoning, probably not even on your radar, and right, actually being a professional runner, not on your radar. So, you know, my podcast, I talk about, you know, I'm like the small step guy. This is a philosophy of living healthy and happy, about how to ease your way into, to, you know, well, essentially how to open yourself up to new things, but not in a way that stresses you out, to kind of try things and find things that you love and pursue those things. What's fascinating to me is somehow you made a transition from college to teaching. So obviously you weren't considering a professional career as a ultra marathoner at this point. What did you start teaching? What was your job as a teacher? High school?
Yeah. For the most part, like, I mean, it's like you said, I definitely had no idea. Like, I knew I wasn't ever going to be a professional runner at like the 5K, 10K distance. I knew it was something I really enjoyed and that it would likely always be like a huge part of my life from a hobby standpoint, an enjoyment standpoint. And then, you know, the stuff that I would do would depend heavily on you know, what I wanted to kind of train for, because I knew it was going to have to be something I wanted to do if I was going to, you know, jam it into a full-time job work week as well. So yeah, I mean, I started out, at a high school, and I did that for, if you count student teaching, I did that for about a year or 2 years, I'm sorry. And then, I actually went back to grad school to get, my special education license as well, to go on top of the social studies, in history majors I had for teaching. Mm-hmm. And so there was a year there where I didn't teach, but I went back as a full-time student. And that's actually when I delved into ultra running for the first time.
How was it introduced to you?
So I was already kind of familiar with it. Like, even I think in college I read some stuff, some books about ultra running. So I knew it was there and I was kind of intrigued by it, but it was kind of like this background goal or thing where I remember thinking like, you know, I'll do an ultra marathon when I'm 30. Uh-huh. And then that'll be kind of like, just kind of like to see what it's all about. And I really had no ambitions in really taking on any, I really didn't know anything about the sport other than that it was there. You know, I had done after college, I continued to train high mileage and kind of like, develop my aerobic capacity and stuff like that, or my aerobic base. And, like, you know, I did a few marathons with like very little direction and very, like, I look back at it now and just think like how much differently I would do it if I was trying to actually peak for a marathon.
Right.
You know, I had some like moderate success with it regardless of that. I think I ran I think the fastest one I ran was a 2:31.
Wow.
And then, you know, after that, when I went back to grad school, I actually noticed like, oh, there's this 50 mile race in Wisconsin in the fall. And, I think I looked at it and was kind of intrigued by it. And then I also saw that like first place was like $1,000. And I was like, you know, I'm in grad school. I could use $1,000.
Very interesting.
So, and I was looking at the time, I was like, you know, just trying to extrapolate things forward and look at pace per mile. And it's kind of one of those ignorance is bliss scenarios too, where you're like, you look at that, you look at the pace and you're like, oh man, that's in the 7 minute mile range. And I was thinking to myself, I'm running 100 mile weeks and my slow miles are 7 minute mile pace. I should be able to do that. And you kind of go in there thinking like not knowing any of the negatives that happen in the sport. So like they're not until they actually happen during the race, they don't stress you out or bother you leading in, which is kind of nice.
Yeah.
But yeah, so, I mean, I did that ultra marathon then and, I fell in love with it, but, you know, I was also finishing up grad school and trying to figure out like what I was going to do with the rest of my life in terms of teaching and where it would be and what type of environment I did. So I kind of put doing another ultra, on the back burner until I finished grad school. And I actually didn't do another one until the following year at that same event, but then it really kind of took off. I started doing them pretty regularly after that.
How did you do in that very first ultra?
Oh yeah, so I won. It was
okay. So here's the thing. Like, okay, so you won the very first ultra, and your love of running. I mean, it came from a love of running. Above all else, this is something you loved. And was this a trail?
For sure.
Was this a trail race? The first one?
Yeah, it was actually. If you're familiar with the North Face series,
yeah.
It was the Midwest Regional, and I believe it was either the second or third year that it was in 2010. So I think that was like the second or third year that series was in existence. So there was still like not a whole lot known about the course, not a whole lot of people who had ran it before. So, it was kind of a fun one to try out.
And you got $1,000.
Yeah. Yeah.
So technically, yeah. So you finished grad school. Do you go back to teaching at that point?
Yeah. So after I finished grad school, I actually, you know, technically to finish my special ed degree, I was supposed to student teach again within that discipline. But, you know, there's a big enough need for that job that I started interviewing in hopes to be able to kind of get a full-time job and do the student teaching kind of like on the job, so to speak.
Right.
And, you know, I was fortunate to get quite a few interviews and a couple different offerings. And I took one of those. And then, yeah, in 2011, I started teaching special ed full-time at a middle school up in Marinette, Wisconsin, which is kind of like about 45 minutes to an hour north of Green Bay.
Gotcha. So now you got the bug of ultramarathoning, but still as a professional endeavor, not really on your radar. I mean, you're still like, I'm a teacher, this is what I do, this is where my focus is, but I love running, and if I can do you're recreational in that sense that you're just kind of, and I'll just let you know that like most of my listeners, overwhelmingly, I don't know them all, but many are not ultramarathoning. I've done only two, three if you count that I ran my own course the day before the day before the race, but I'm not a big runner. But I am focused on just the pursuit of a life that you want to live. And I'm really focused on how you, because it's not like you, I mean, I would say in some fashion you're prodigious. I mean, you win your first race. You're running. You say your slow miles are 7. I mean, that's just like amazingly fast. Obviously, you've had a history that you didn't start a week before the race. You've been running since you were in junior high and all these kinds of things. But there's something, is that little spark that I want to focus on that makes you go, at some point, I'm making the leap. Because you don't teach anymore, right?
Right. No, I don't. Yeah, it, you know, it's one of those things where for me, like my personality, and I guess you can probably see this in a lot of different avenues that I've kind of focused on, whether it's running related or not, is like I really get like intrigued by, or get curious, I guess, about like, well, what is this going to do? How is this going to work and stuff like that? And kind of playing around with things as opposed to just, you know, taking what is most available and following what like a cookie cutter approach, so to speak. You know, so like I was constantly throughout, you know, teaching and training for ultra marathons, like always like looking at like, how does this affect my training? Or how does this affect this? And, you know, trying these different things and trying to see for myself. So like, as I did that, you know, I definitely delved into, you know, other things like health and nutrition and a lot of different like training principles and things, and tried them out on myself, and, you know, blogged about it and stuff like that. Cause I did like to write. My background in history and social studies was heavily writing based. So, you know, I always had a kind of a passion for that. And, yeah, eventually it just got to the point where it was like, I loved teaching, and I had a really good teaching job that, was a nice fit for me, but it was one of those things where you have like X amount of time. And so I want to invest, you know, my time into the highest priorities that I currently had. And, you know, running had definitely been one of them my entire life. So when I had the opportunity to work for Ultra Footwear, who is also my main sponsor for running as well, out here in California, I saw it as kind of like, here's a chance to really, really go after, you know, ideal training and racing scenarios, and have the flexibility in my schedule to be able to, like, you know, go over to races like Comrades, where I'll be going for the first time this year, which wasn't really very feasible when I was teaching, because it was always like the last or second to last week of the school year, and it's kind of tough to really even want to take off that time frame. So like kind of having that avenue is when or having that those options were kind of the main reason I stepped away from teaching. You know,
like,
and then
Comrades, just so my listeners know, Comrades is, that's in South Africa, right?
Yeah, it's interesting. It's
80K?
It's actually, yeah, 89. It's it's like the biggest ultra marathon on the planet from like a starting standpoint. It's got like 20,000 participants, and like you get a lot of like really, really fast guys who are local to the area and, you know, around the world as well, going there. So it's super competitive too for a road ultra marathon. But yeah, so it's been one I've wanted to do for a while, and it's like very much realistic to do it now with my current job and training structure, I guess.
Yeah. And so, but I mean, where was the shift? Like where did it happen where you were going, I've got to make sure my teaching job is my priority and I'm training around that, to my training is my priority and I'm having to adjust my teaching job around that. I mean, where was the point where you went, this is it. Like, if I don't do this now, I'm not going to do it. Like, did Ultra come to you and say, we want to hire you? Or did you come to Ultra and go, I'm making the move?
Yeah, so it actually was kind of like just a perfect timing of everything. You know, I'd been teaching for about 5 years, so I very much kind of knew, like where I was in that and what I could expect from it. I started actually doing online coaching too a couple of years before, and that started to grow quite a bit. As my blog gained popularity and I did podcasts and things like that, I started getting more coaching clients, and it was to the point where I was kind of capping it. Like, I knew like it was something that if I really opened up, I could maybe potentially make a living doing that. So Ultra had also at the same time actually been growing a lot as a company. So they started, you know, having to hire more people to help with like their marketing and their just information delivery to all these different accounts and things. So they had a bunch of these positions open up to do like field marketing and events like what we did at Mendocino, So they had actually, they offered, like I was talking to them about my athlete contract, and they had said, like, you know, if you're interested, we also have these positions too that you could apply for. So, you know, I looked at that and I was like, you know, I'd visited California in 2009 and knew I loved that state and that area and like the weather. And, they had a couple spots open there. So I applied for that. And then, when they hired me, I knew, I was like, all right, cool. This is, this is the time to do this while I'm kind of at a point in my running where, I'm at, well, I guess prime age, you could say, for ultra marathon running, and, you know, teaching something you very much can go back to at any age. So it wasn't something I saw as a huge risk either. It was a life experience I would probably regret not taking advantage of more so than I would regret taking advantage of if,
right.
If you know, depending on how things played out. So.
How old are you? 34? How old are you?
I'm 30.
30, okay. And I think it's interesting. I don't know if my listeners know this, but ultramarathoning is one of these things that your peak time is later than most people think it would be. I noticed in my race, the one that I directed, the Mendocino one, that I had a very small amount of people that were aged less than 30. Like, that was the smallest demographic. Most people were 30 plus.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's certainly grown a bit in the last few years where you're getting some like fast younger guys that are like coming off, you know, similar to my background, some of them much more talented, but like coming off and, you know, ripping off some pretty impressive, like, you know, that 30K to 100K distance. So you are seeing some more youth come into the sport, but it's not something that's like really pushing older individuals out. You can still be incredibly, I mean, you look at someone like Max King, who's I think like 34, and he's still very much one of the top, you know, like 50K to 100K runners in the country or world for that matter. So yeah, it's not something where you have to be like 25 and, you know, take advantage of like a 2 or 3 year window and then the next crop of guys come in and push you out. And then once you get up to 100 mile distance, you know, it's even more like, I guess, a strategy, and, you know, there's more elements and variables at play. So having some knowledge of doing it in the past or having put in your body through that gauntlet before is advantageous. So you see guys super competitive into their 40s even.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, you know, I've been in the sport is so like small yet so enormous in the sense that like, relative to like other sports, there's still not a ton of people doing it. But there's just so much variety. You can do anything from like a 50K, like you have at Mendocino where it's trails and climbing and descending, or you can do like a 6 day event on a track where you just see how far you can get in 6 days running around a circle. And, you know, that's all one sport for the most part. So like you get different ages in there too. Like, you know, like one of the most, standout, I guess, quote unquote, untouchable records in the sport, in my opinion, is a guy named Yannis Kuras has this 24-hour record where he ran, I think it was like a kilometer past 188 miles.
My God.
It was like 188.7 or 8 or something like that. And in 24 hours, which, for your audiences, if they can try to wrap their mind around, that's like about a 729, 730 mile pace for 24 consecutive hours that he was, you know, moving at that pace or faster, you know, 'cause he's probably stopping a few times too. And, so yeah, like that, you know, and he was 40 when he did that. So like, you know, it was,
that's the thing.
Right, right. You can definitely get some competitive older people in it. So,
I mean,
you know,
Jurek's over. I think Jurek's older than 40, and he just did the Appalachian. He just set that record.
Yeah, yeah. Jurek, I think, is right around that age, 40 years old. And I think of guys like Mike Morton when he was 42, I believe, and he was third place at Western States in arguably one of the most competitive years that they've had at that event.
Wow.
You know, so yeah, you can definitely, it's not necessarily a young man's sport to dominate. You know, there's definitely a wide range that you can do.
So now that you've been a full, you know, essentially, I mean, I know you're working for Ultra, but you're more, I don't know what kind of hours you put in there, but clearly you racing is in their best interest. They want you, you know, training and racing, obviously. And but do you feel like you sacrificed something when you gave up the relative security of a teaching job, or do you feel like you kind of, like you said, you can always go back to it, so you sort of set up a good foundation that you can venture from, but also return to as needed?
Yeah, it's, you're right. Like the way that my job is set up right now, like what I do, what I would consider work is very much like something I would enjoy doing outside of work if I wasn't, you know, like going places and talking about ultra running or talking about ultra footwear and, you know, leading group runs and going to events and stuff, you know, stuff that I was doing essentially for free before that because I enjoyed doing it. So, you know, the hours you put in is like very much just, it feels like you're living life, and work is like just as happening because you're doing what you're passionate in, which is super nice. Like I understand that a lot of people don't have that luxury. So, it's definitely something I'm very fortunate and very, very, very happy that I had that opportunity. And yeah, you know, it's one of those things where, when I left teaching, it was like the security of being able to go back was there. So like for me, I thought, you know, what's the worst case scenario? I do this for 2 or 3 years and I fall flat on my face and I go back to teaching, or, or, you know, I do this and it's very successful and I end up kind of growing, you know, my own personal like brand or business too, whether it's through coaching or, you know, like figuring out, or like, you know, just evolving into the role that Ultra has for me and, you know, stuff like that. So, you know, it's definitely a journey and it's definitely something that, there's a lot of uncertainty, but on the same time frame, it was something that I was very, very interested in doing. So it was a very fun journey to kind of like take on.
Was it a pretty easy decision, or was there a fear around it when you went, oh my God, what am I doing?
Yes. So, I mean, it was something that I was always kind of looking at it just because like when I start, like maybe in 2013 or so, like I really started having, like when my coaching stuff started growing, like I really started looking at like, you know, where's the sport going and what are opportunities to work within the sport, as opposed to having like your work be something completely separate from that. And so I started teasing the idea, I guess, back then as to like, you know, where, what are my options? So when it came time to, when that opportunity to work with Ultra Footwear kind of like came up, I definitely, definitely had already thought long and hard about like, what am I going to do if an opportunity comes? And when that one presented itself, it seemed like it was about as perfect as it could get for me. So, it was basically immediate, but not something I had been thinking about for quite a while before the opportunity was actually there.
How'd your parents, I mean, obviously you're a grown man, but I mean, were they like, what the hell are you doing?
Yeah. I mean, I think they were like pretty well, they understood that like I wasn't very typical in terms of like what I wanted to do and like my lifestyle, I guess, when it comes to like, you know, there's not a lot of people investing 20 hours a week into running and training. So they definitely knew like I was different in that aspect and that, but they also knew that it was something I had to be super passionate in. So, they were definitely excited for that. You know, they weren't thrilled that I was moving across the country from where they're at, but, yeah. in the same breath, you know, they're super supportive and, you know, they want to see me do well in whatever it is I want to do. So, they're happy to kind of see that opportunity present itself for me.
That's amazing. And when did you actually become, when did you move to Ultra and doing this full time? And this is very recent.
Yeah. So I moved, some of the school year last year, we ended in mid June, and I think it was maybe 2 or 3 days after the school year ended, I had, you know, I literally got rid of everything I couldn't fit into, my Nissan Versa hatchback and like loaded up everything else either in or on top of it and took it out here. And by late June, I got out into Davis and started kind of getting things set up around this area.
So you're literally, this is like new. I mean, you're not even a year.
Yeah. So yeah, I'm not even a year.
And wow.
It's always fun to see like, you know, like what there, I mean, there's a lot of events and activities that are kind of like annual events, so I'm experiencing all of those for like the first time. And
but I looked at your history, you know, your basically your race history, on your mm-hmm. on your site, and you're running a lot of races.
Yeah.
And a lot of that was while you, if this is less than a year that you've been doing this full time, I mean, you set the world record in what year?
2013.
Before you quit your job or after?
Yeah, that was before.
Yeah. That's amazing to me. Tell my listeners what you still hold the world record.
Yeah. So the world record is, distance run in 12 hours. And that came out to like, I think it was like 101.7 miles in 12 hours.
Okay.
And, you know, that was actually, I was actually kind of chasing the American record for 100 miles, which I got that day as well. And the race director was like, you know, there's this 12 hour world record that you're on pace for. So when you finish 100 miles, don't stop, keep going to 12 hours to see how far you can get. So I think that was probably the race that, it drew the most attention on anything I had done.
Uh-huh.
So, it was certainly kind of a good catalyst to motivate me to look as to like, you know, is this, do I want to be involved in this sport or this activity in more ways than just, you know, running on alongside, my teaching profession.
Right. And just so my listeners know too, this was a world record and an American record set on a track.
Yeah, it was, Well, there's this event in Phoenix called the Desert Solstice, and it's an invitational put on by Aravipa Running, where they basically set it up for the main event is a 24-hour, but a lot they kind of try to pick or to take applicants or whatever for from people who are going to chase a record on a track at an ultra distance for the most part.
Do you alternate? So, yeah. You go like four laps one direction, four laps another direction.
They do a switch, but it's every 4 hours.
You run the same direction for 4 hours?
Yep, and then you flip.
Okay. So this is like the crux of this interview that I want to get into.
Okay, cool.
And that is that so you already touched on it a little bit. You said, you know, you were talking about how this isn't necessarily a young person's sport, that you can still be a contender. But you also mentioned that it's like the experience that you've gained over the years. And what you're talking about is that, at least as I'm hearing it, is the transition from the physical prowess, which is obviously first and foremost, I guess, but I guess I'll ask you, into the mental side of this. Like I know just from my limited, you know, experience with ultras, I'll tell you, like I had a really bad day on the 50, and I would say that I kept like begging that something physical would go wrong with me, so I'd have an excuse to quit, and mm-hmm. and nothing physical ever went wrong. So it was like 90% mental for me. And the fact that you're running 100 miles around a track, I don't even know that you, like, I don't know what that, I don't even know how to experience that. I don't know what you do mentally to pull that off. I think mm-hmm. even more than, I mean, 100 miles on trails is also just 100 miles is 100 miles, but on a track, I can't even imagine what it takes mentally to not absolutely lose your marbles.
Yeah, so I've definitely kind of learned by doing that approach, because so that race was actually one of, I think, five or six track ultramarathons I've done, the first of them. And you know, it was eye-opening in that what you said, how much mental it really is, because you certainly don't want to be counting down laps, not at least not until like they're like within like, you know, 20 or 25 laps to go. So like you're always trying to kind of put yourself mentally in a place away from the track. And so the first one I did, you know, that was all new. So I was very much, I kind of learned that is like almost like adapted to it as it went on. Like, you know, it's exciting and energetic when you start. You're like, okay, I'm doing something new. This is unknown territory for me. And, you know, that novelty wears off relatively soon. And then you kind of start looking for something else to focus on. And I think I found out early on that like setting these little benchmarks along the way, and just focusing on those as opposed to like, all right, I'm 30 miles in, I've got 70 miles to go kind of a thing, where you never want to be thinking about the entirety of the event from the early stages, because that'll just overwhelm you mentally. And you won't do well. So like I was finding things like, like thinking of like, all right, here's this like 6 mile loop or something I do at home all the time, where I know like where mile marker is on it, like very, very well. And just kind of like, I guess almost mentally going to that spot and mm-hmm. pretending I was out there doing that run. And then, you know, when I'd finish a lap, I'd be like, okay, where would I be on this, on that route at a quarter mile, and just keep doing that until like you kind of mentally just completed that loop. And then you maybe focus on something different. Like, all right, I need to get something to drink in the next like 20 minutes or so. So then you say, all right, I'm going to do 8 laps, and then I get to grab that bottle of water. So then you're focused on just that 8 laps, and then you get the rewards. All these little carrots along the way, I think is the way I ended up doing it. Uh-huh. So I actually went to Desert Solstice again this last year and lowered my time for the American record. And that one I very much prepared for differently, because I knew I was going to be doing it. Whereas the first time I did Desert Solstice, it was kind of like I had thought my season was over like earlier on. And then I had a couple good races. And then the race director actually reached out and asked if I wanted to do Desert Solstice probably like 5, maybe 6 weeks before. And I was like, why not? What's the worst that can happen?
Right.
So this next time, this year, I kind of had a lot more knowledge about it. And I would go to the track and actually practice the mental aspect
okay.
as a workout just as much as the physical. Like I would do a progression run on the track where you're like gradually speeding up.
Right.
But I would do it also like trying to put myself like in a kind of like a trance, I guess, or a meditative state, you could say. So like just trying to get really good at being able to like kind of flip off that switch of like, I know where I'm at, I'm doing this track race, and just kind of being in a different place almost. And that really, really helped. I did enough workouts like that I got pretty good at, I guess, zoning out, for lack of better words. And at Desert Solstice this last time, I would say I was probably about 70 miles into the race before I even really started thinking about the fact that I was on a track.
Unbelievable. And you beat your own American record.
Yeah, yeah. So I finished in 11 hours and 40 minutes and 55 seconds this time, where the first time in 2013, it was 11 hours and 47 minutes.
Wow. But you didn't keep running this time?
No. So I actually had some hamstring cramping that was starting to kind of happen a little bit the last like 15, 20 miles or so. And when I finished, so they marked the 100-mile spot. I thought like, all right, I'm going to stop and kind of start walking
mm-hmm.
and just kind of like try to get, you know, maybe take in some fuel or like, just kind of like stretch this hamstring out a bit. And as soon as I stopped running, like
your body tightened up. Yeah.
Hamstring tightened up, and I actually had to like sit down. And then, you know, once I sat down, it was like, I wasn't getting back up. So.
Yeah. Amazing. One thing I noted, and this is, I was talking to my training partner this morning, we were on a run, and this is kind of a little bit off topic, except, you know, you finished my race in your time was 3:55. Mm-hmm. And this is not so much off topic because it is about the mental aspect of this, but I think that a lot of runners don't realize, they look at a guy like you and it's like, it is amazing. I mean, when you came across the finish line, it was like you just ran to the store for a freaking loaf of bread. Like I was like, no stress on your face. It's amazing to me. But I think that there's an appreciation, at least that I have, as a middle to the, I'm like between middle and the back of the pack. Like that's kind of where I sit.
Mm-hmm.
And there's definitely a mental struggle. I mean, I'll ask you this. Can you admit that it's kind of nice that you finished the race like that in 4 hours, whereas the people that were at the back finished in 9? Like, they were on this course for a whole another 5 hours, which is mentally grueling if you think about it. So I always think of the elites like, you're done, you're having a beer like 3 hours before, you know what I mean?
Right.
Like, is there a certain aspect where you're like, is there an appreciation that you have for people that are middle or back of the pack that are just going through the same distance at so much longer of a time to be out there?
Oh, definitely. I mean, I think of, you know, even to the extent where, like, when I went into Desert Solstice, even the first time when I had no American record or world record to my name, like, I still was chasing that, and I was under pace all day long. So I had this big incentive to, like, keep pushing. Whereas if I was just out there kind of trying to see, like, you know, like, oh, how can I do today? Like, I don't know that the mental strength would have been there certainly not as much. So like knowing that like from a mental side of things, really it's equally as hard. Like you know, it's just longer. So it'd be like for me running for 9 hours, you know, that's the mental like energy that's going to go into someone who's going to finish like Mendocino in 9 hours. So like, I know what it feels like to run for 9 hours and the mental tax that has. And like, so there's a huge appreciation for that. And, I think that's something that's really unique about the sport in general is, you have these scenarios in which the community is so strong that whether you're first or last or somewhere in between, like everyone understands that mental battle that you went through. And it's, you know, whether you're coming in at the very end, that physical and mental state that you're in is something that people outside of the community probably don't have an appreciation for as much. They're certainly oftentimes surprised by it or shocked by it, but you can tell like it kind of evolves as a camaraderie or like just like, you know, you get in the community because you know when you talk to that person that they experienced the same thing you did, you know, whether it was done in, you know, a fast pace or a slower pace. So it's a really cool to see, you know, everyone, you know, participate in these events and kind of have their own journey from start to finish.
I got to tell you, like, I've only run two marathons, you know, in my life, and they were both done when I was 45. Like, I run recreationally for a long time, but I was new to the race. And as soon as I did the two marathons, I was like, what's next? You know, I wanted to see, and that's when I did the ultras the following year. But I love the ultra community because I feel like it hasn't been fully tainted yet. Like, I feel like there is a camaraderie, and I always hear these stories, and maybe they're urban myths, but I hear stories of like competitors where one gets off course and the other one they're competing against, like, hey, you know, you took a wrong turn. Like, there's still this, like, yes, we're competing, but it's not cutthroat. It hasn't been, you know, sullied by super huge corporate money yet. Is that where you see it right now? Do you see, has it changed even in the short time relatively that you've been in the world of ultra marathoning, or where do you see it going even?
Yeah, it's definitely unique where it's grown enough that now it's competitive up front. Not that it wasn't before, but it's getting competitive enough up front that like people are, gone are the days where like you just kind of go out to the trails and run for a few hours here and there, and then you show up to this race, and then if you're talented enough, you maybe win it. Now it's like you got to do like specific workouts, train on that environment and things like that. So that part of the sport has grown a ton. But what's kind of stayed true for the most part is that camaraderie aspect where like you get a scenario where like at Western States when Rob Krar won for his second year in a row, you know, he's finished at 9 something at night on Saturday. And then you have these folks who are trying to make the last cutoff. We're coming in at 11 a.m. the following day. And here's Rob Krar up at the 1 mile to go aid station, cheering and essentially helping pace in like the last finisher. So like, or the last person who's going to finish under the cutoff. And, you know, you don't see that in other sports. I mean, that'd be almost like, a top level football player, you know, going to his local high school and cheering on like, you know, the kicker or something like that. You know, it's like, you don't see that in any other sport. So, I mean, that community is definitely still strong.
What do you think, know, it is about trail runner and ultra marathoners that is that? I mean, what is that thing? Cause I mean, there's a respect for Nate, and I'm talking about trails, but there's a respect for the trails. There's respect for outdoors. There's discussions of the view. You know, even with elites, they're like, God, that was a beautiful run. Like, there's a connection that's beyond, I think, just like, I got to get this pace. I got to get this win. It's like also the experience of this. I really want to get to your thinking in terms of, I mean, you're living something that you're passionate about. So to me, I want people that listen to me on this podcast to find something that they're passionate about and pursue it, even if it's in the most minute sort of ways. They don't have to give up or turn their lives upside down, but I want them to experience things of passion. And you're actually living this, but you transitioned to. But what is your experience? Like, what is that thing for you?
Yeah, so it's interesting for, like, you know, I think it comes in so many different ways because of the variety you have in the sport. but like it also has like this sense of, I think, no matter, it goes back a little to what you're saying before, no matter what your ability level is, you know, there's going to be a point in certainly for 100 miles, there's going to be a point where like you're questioning what you're doing, or you're asking yourself, like, am I going to make it? Was this smart? Like, or did I hurt this? And then you persevere. So like whether you finish 100 miles in, you know, 36 hours or in 15 hours, like you have this unspoken like knowledge that everyone else who finished had that point. And there's like a level of respect, I think, there that like, you can't connect to with someone who hasn't really been in the sport or doing that activity like everyone else has. So I think, and then to kind of go on what your last part of the question was, like, you know, you find a part of the sport, I think, that really motivates you. And then like you make that kind of like your priority. And then I think the next step is to really, you know, not necessarily box yourself into that one priority, but experience the other spots at a more like, this is a cool community with like some really, really spectacular events and opportunities. Maybe it's not my A race, or maybe it's not my specialty or my strength, but I'm going to do it because I know it's going to be fun, and I know it's going to be an incredible experience to talk about with the other people who are doing it too.
Yeah. And so when, and I know you've probably experienced this, so I'm just going to guess, but I've heard the question like, you know, the implication is that it's totally, you know, we're not designed to run that far. Why the hell would you put yourself through this? You know, I mean, obviously you love running and that's fine. I do too. But then there's that thing of like, but you're going for 100 miles. You know, and then there's people who sort of push that with the, with bad water. And then there's sure, 200 miles. And like, what is the are you that kind of personality that you're like chasing that next, that limit, like the, almost like the adrenaline junkie thing? Or how do you respond to somebody who's like, well, this is, you know, that's a ridiculous, why would you do that to your body? Like, what is that? How do you, where do you sit on that?
Yeah. I mean, for me, it's, you know, I think it's multidimensional. There's like a few things at play there. I mean, there's certainly this quest to, for me to see, like, I'm very curious about how far I can push myself. Like I really, really like the, not just the act of like trying to do it, but the preparation going into it. Like, you know, what happens if I do this instead? Or what if I add this to my routine? You know, like, how is that going to impact it and stuff like that? So like there's that kind of desire to explore the unknown. And I think some of that is just because, like, you know, in living nowadays, like for a lot of people, there isn't a whole lot of uncertainty. I mean, there's some small uncertainties, but nothing like nothing really like that you would liken to like you would experience when you're like living on the land or something like that, or what you'd experience in a third world country where you don't know where your next meal's coming from. Like there's not many people who can say that they have those type of experiences in their life. So kind of exploring that through other avenues, like finding like that unknown and going after it as opposed to like avoiding it, is really intriguing to me. You know, and then there's also the competitive side of things too. Like, you know, I think it's probably from growing up doing a lot of sports and things like that. There's always been that like sense of competition, you know, seeing where you stack up against other people or yourself, depending on the event or the goal. And like, you know, that has a very big appeal to me as well. So there's a couple different kind of things at play there, I guess.
Yeah, just exploring, you know, what you can handle, what you're, you know, like you said, I love the, you know, being okay with the unknown. You know, this is the things we grapple with. And sometimes, you know, people spend their lives of trying to avoid stress, trying to do everything mm-hmm. they can to never be in a place of, I talk about being uncomfortable a lot on the podcast, you know, that place of discomfort and getting to know what that's like. And when you have the arsenal of experience of going through that and knowing you're going to be okay on the other side, how that can open up for so many, you know, open up so many things in your life. Is that, I mean, I'm assuming that's how it's been for you.
Sure. Yeah. And then, you know, there's also this, you know, I find myself thinking about this more now that I've done quite a few of these. I think I've done a little 31, 32 ultra marathons now. And it's like, now it's like, you know, like I know there's points in races sometimes where you start to question yourself and you start to question, like, can I do this? Or it's like, you start to almost, your brain almost tries to kind of like convince you that you should slow down or stop. And now it's like, you start thinking about, yeah, but if I keep pushing and this happens, like this positive result happens, how much better am I going to feel about this experience than if I, you know, settle down or like settle and take it in a little easier than I'm physically capable of. So like, yeah, there's like so many different like aspects at play there in terms of like that exploration or like, you know, what it's going to do in terms of, you know, in some cases change your life. Like you think of like people, so some people who, are doing this as a challenge or a way to like kind of refocus their energies or their life path. And then they do it and they can look at it as this milestone or this like turning point, so to speak. So, I mean, you get a lot of stories like that in this sport too. So, you know, having some of those like life experiences, I think, where you can reflect back on and be really, really happy about, and, that type of thing, I think is just really beneficial for like your mental health and long-term health too.
Yeah. And then, and it just obviously, I think it was Sage Candidate. He's like, you know, when he said, when he runs, he in a way, he kind of separates his mind from discomfort. Like he's able to, even when he's in physical discomfort, he can sort of detach a little bit. And I can't imagine that only happens, you know, I can't imagine that happens in any other way other than getting the experience over time of seeing that you can be okay. And that on the other end of it, you'll be glad that you did it.
Yeah. It's kind of like getting comfortable being uncomfortable.
And, exactly.
You know, with Sage's running background, he's certainly been in an uncomfortable situation. So he's, you know, his mental ability to kind of like see that as, oh, that's just part of it, as opposed to like, wow, this hurts. Why does it hurt? I need to stop it, kind of a thing.
Uh-huh. And where it's, go ahead.
Oh, where it's like he's almost expecting, like he knows it going in. Like if he's going to do, whether it's a marathon or an ultra marathon or whatever, he knows like it's going to hurt at this point. And if it doesn't, that means I'm not doing something right. So,
right.
So like you can, it's like comfortable, being comfortable about being uncomfortable.
Right. And I think that's a, you know, I mean, that's why, as odd as people may think that I had an ultra marathon on this podcast, I think that's the overall lesson here is the mental side of this and being comfortable with the uncomfortable as a way of saying, that's just sometimes what it takes to follow passion and to try things that aren't necessarily safe, but that enhance your life and make you live a life of passion and joy. I'm assuming that's it for you. And that if it weren't joyful for you, you would walk because you could.
Right. Yeah. It's, you know, it's, and it comes down to like even a bigger picture than that too, where, you have, at some point you have to ask yourself, what is it I'm doing and, in life in general? And is it something that I'm happy with, or I'm pleased that I'm doing? And if the answer is no, if you're just kind of going through the motions and passing time, like you gotta redirect yourself. So, you know, for me, that's been running for a long time, and, more recently, but certainly not in the super near like time frame, has been ultra running has been something I've been really, really excited to go and do. And, when I finish it or when I'm participating in it, I can definitely, know that it's something I want to be doing and something that I love to do, as opposed to something I'm doing just to get through it, or doing it because someone else told me to, kind of a thing.
Right. And so I guess I'll finish by asking you, do you see the sport getting sort of over the hump the way that marathoning did, where it just blows up? Or do you think it could stay somewhat with the same sort of spirit and ethic that it has now? Or do you see that change? Are you seeing that change already? Or where do you see the sport right now?
It's really interesting, because like I think, you know, if you go back a decade or certainly two decades, the sport was very much like very much more singularly dimensioned, in the sense that like it was all kind of a small community type of thing, where that is certainly prevalent now. there's certainly more competitive, more like, you know, focus on that part of it as well, than there maybe was in the past. But there's always kind of like, you know, the sport's grown a lot. So we have like, I don't have any of the stats readily available, but there's like tons more ultra marathons in the country than there were 10 years ago. And like, I think 100 milers have grown like from like, I think it was like 27, 10 years ago to like now there's like well over 100 of them around the country.
Wow.
So like you can always find what you're looking for if you're willing to like focus on the positives as opposed to what you may perceive as a negative. So if you're like, you know, I really miss the super small community where like where it's not competitive up front and the media's focus isn't on the front runners, you can find those events. So like that's there. But then if you're someone who's like, you know, I like the community type thing, but I also want a super high profile race where there's news coverage and like international competition, you know, those are available to you too.
Right.
So I think the sport, you know, is definitely just grown so that there's more options for more people.
Gotcha.
So you're probably seeing more people enter because of that.
Gotcha. Well, I'll finish up by asking you what's next for you. What do you got on your plate, goals even, or races coming up that you're kind of laser focused on?
Yeah, so the next big one that's coming up for me is Comrades in South Africa that I think we talked about a little bit earlier. So that one's coming up really soon. That's in a couple of weeks. I'm probably going to be on the World 100K team this year. And so this will be the third year that I've participated on Team USA's World 100K Championships team. And we're looking to have a really strong men's team for that. So that's something I'll definitely focus a lot of energy on. That's not until like late November, early December though. So, I'm toying with possibly going, you know, one thing I've been chasing a bit other than just seeing how far I can push myself is, my American record at 100 miles is 12 minutes off of the world record.
Oh, wow.
So, I'm looking at some potential scenarios and maybe making an attempt at that in like late summer, early fall, before I really get, deep into 100K training.
And that would be a track race, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I would, ideally, you know, you find something where the climate is indoors, very, very reasonable, like no wind.
Yeah.
If you can get cloudy, better yet. And,
yeah,
you know, a track is maybe the most monotonous, but also probably the fastest surface you can really get.
Right.
So yeah, that's kind of like, I'll definitely sprinkle in some more stuff. I mean, one of the reasons I wanted to move out west was the access to trails and things like that. So I want to do some more trail races. Eventually I want to pick one as an A race and really, really just kind of like study the course and get good time on similar terrain and then make a really hard push and feel like, you know, I didn't leave anything on the training table. Haven't really figured out which race that is yet though. So hopefully sooner than later.
I'm sorry, I should know this, but have you done Western States?
Yeah. So that was actually my first 100 miler.
Okay.
I qualified for it in 2012 by winning the Ice Age 50 mile, which was a golden ticket race that year.
Gotcha.
So I kind of just did it like, because everyone told me you don't pass up on a Western States ticket.
Right.
I'm like, all right, guess I'm doing my first 100 miler. So that was, that was a pretty cool experience. But,
how'd you do in that race?
I think I was 14th in 1653 or something like that.
Amazing.
So, amazing. And I mean, it's right in my backyard now too. I'm about 40 minute drive from Auburn where it finishes. So
yeah,
that's why
I asked, cause I know where you are. And so I thought, well, that's a no-brainer right there.
Right. So that's one I'm definitely probably going to target for next year. But you know, that's over a year, I guess, away yet. So haven't really thought too much about it yet.
Yeah, sounds like you got a lot going on. Well, I really appreciate you taking the time to talk to me. I'm always interested, and you know, I just interview all sorts of different kind of people. I don't do a ton of interviews, but there's sometimes when I come across people where I'm intrigued at just their pursuit of their own lives and how they got to what they're doing, and hopefully my listeners get a sense of something they can apply to their own lives through your experiences too. So anyway, I wish you all the best, and I really enjoyed meeting you. I felt just like a fond meeting. I was like, I really want to talk to that guy. So it was worked out. Now, if you hadn't won the race, you know, we wouldn't be having this discussion. I'm joking. It really wouldn't matter anyway. But I'm glad you did it, and hopefully, if you ever want to come back to do that race, I'd love to have you back anytime. So,
yeah, I certainly would. I'm really, really happy you had me on the podcast, and grateful. The race was a super cool race, especially for a first year race. The way that people certainly had interest in it as it sold out, and I think it'll grow to whatever you want it to. And in an area like that, it's hard to turn down. So
yeah, I know.
It'll be a fun one to do again in the future, and certainly to follow as well, and see it kind of evolve.
Cool. Well, I wish you all the best, and we'll have to keep in touch.
Awesome. Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks, Zach.
All right, you guys, Zach Bitter. I hope you enjoyed that. I really did, and there's something about that guy I really like. I'm going to get all kind of hippie, but I like his energy. I think that he's really positive. He was really cool at the race, supportive of other runners. And anyway, I'm taken with the whole world, even though I'm not, necessarily at all a good runner. All right, you guys, listen, back next week with episode 140. Again, huge number, but not different than 139, essentially. All right, you guys, thank you for the emails that have been coming in. If you're interested in emailing me, you can do that by typing podcast@sidgarzahillman.com. That's podcast@sidgarzahillman.com. Shoot me an email. I've been getting some really lovely emails from people, and I'm glad to know that there are people at the other end of this microphone. So thank you guys, one and all. I appreciate all of your support in no matter how what form that comes in. I really do appreciate it. Next week, you guys, I'm going to be back with the Approaching the Natural podcast. For now, this is Sid Garza-Hillman signing off. Until next week, be well.
This stone, the only way out is to run. The only way out is to buckle down. This storm, the only way out is to come on down. The only way out is to watch it pass through. If I ask too much of everything, your mystique is tired and paper thin. Tell me why this is happening. When our time is finally meaning something. This way, the way you shut down, it makes me scream. Your silence is unsettling. This storm, the only way out is the way. See, the only way out is to get you out. If I ask too much of everything, your mystique is tied and paper thin. Tell me why this is happening. Time is finally. If I ask too much of everything, something.